Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show, we have our good friend, Alex Howell. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, it's so fun. I just got back from Disneyland. I am super charged up right now, and it is Monday morning. So, Alex, how the hell did you get to the couch today?
That is probably the longest, oddest story ever.
Yeah. So
I had you on my podcast. I was just reaching out to a lot of nonprofits and a lot of individuals, and I saw this thing called the Arts Asylum and thought, wow, that seems really neat. I need to have them on. I sent, I think, just a message to the general chat, right? And you had responded, came on the show, realized on the show that we knew a lot of the same people. And then my audio file crashed, so I then had to get a new computer, called Corey, but in the interim time between the first one that crashed and the one that eventually went live, we started realizing how many people we knew. And then when you came on the show the second time, we were sitting down there before we went live, and I could not believe it, but you had a review of Guys and Dolls that you had written, that my parents had just gotten me the reviews.
Boom!
From Cappy's. They were just in their house, like, you probably want these, right? And so 2 months before that, we had moved out of one house into a place to stay for about 3 weeks, bought the next house. So the furniture had really just kind of been delivered when Corey came over and literally pulled out the drawer and pulled the Cappy review out while he was sitting there.
It was
the craziest thing. Yeah.
I had specifically, talked about him.
Yeah.
In it. I would, because I think we were in the middle of our chat or something, and you were like, yeah, I played Sky Masterson, and I was like, with Josh Minnis? And all of them? You mean,
You mean this person, and this person, and this person?
Yeah. And it was goofy as fuck. And then you also know our friend Ray, who I will talk about, Ray Hunter, or whatever. That was just, it was so goofy. And then the new house that he's in happens to be across, literally the lake from my cousin Kendra, who just moved. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
I sent you to their neighborhood because I switched up a couple of numbers in the address. So he was like, what the fuck are you?
I was like, I don't think you live where you think you live right now. This is putting me in the middle of a lake right now. So that was really cool. And what is your podcast name?
10 Tabs Open, and it's TEN. So 10tabsopen.com is where you can find it.
Yeah. And what made you sort of start your podcast?
So I started one, and I think the website's still live, but I started one called The Retired Millennial and kind of added that to a blog and that kind of thing. And the whole idea was, I had transitioned from being in finance to being in real estate. And I love both of them, but I really like the investment side of real estate because my brain goes to numbers. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, I had no outlet for the numbers part of my brain, and that is how I constantly think. So I was like, I'm going to start this thing, I'm going to talk about finance, I'm just going to get it out there. Even if nobody looks at it, at least mentally I can clear my mind. And I recorded about 2 or 3 episodes of that podcast, and I named it the same thing, The Retired Millennial. And I couldn't stand it. All I was doing was talking to myself. So it was 20 minutes of me. It was like, some people are really good at this. I am horrible at it. So I shut it down, kicked the actual podcast off of iTunes. And then for a couple of years, I just started listening to the medium. And, I listened to Dax Shepard, just started one, I think, last year, Armchair Expert. Mm-hmm. My wife loves him and loves that, so that's always fun. And she's like, okay, this is the episode you need to listen to.
Yeah.
Like, I've just listened to one with Dan Savage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it I love
was
Dan Savage.
Wonderful.
That I've guy. I read all of his books.
I don't think I've ever listened to somebody who can just say things that I don't think anybody else would be comfortable saying.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to have that kind of person to listen to because you're like, this is a different kind of human, and I kind of need to hear this stuff. But then I also listened to Joe Rogan and a couple others, and the thing that really kind of set in my mind was, it's much more interesting to listen to a conversation because it's just not something that you see every day. And especially a long form, mine was I think 2.5 hours with you, 3 hours with Eric, I think my shortest one's 55 minutes, and that was with somebody that I had never met.
Yeah.
And so, it's just been interesting, and I told people, it started out with the idea that I could contact people that I didn't know and still have interactions with them.
Yeah.
Because in my business, it's all marketing and getting your name out there. And so it was like, this is a great opportunity. And it's actually evolved because now I just love doing it.
Yeah.
And so I'll reach out to somebody and it's way easier to say, hey, do you want to come to my podcast for a few hours and just kind of talk about yourself and talk about what you do? And then it's a lot more difficult on the other side to do that if you don't have a podcast. Because if I just contacted Corey and said, hey, do you want to come to my basement and record a podcast? and just have a conversation. He's like, oh, no. I've seen too many movies. It's not going to happen.
Actually, I would be totally.
So you're Sky Masterson?
Yeah. Some guy's saying, come to my podcast. Sure, man. What do you want to do?
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but most people that are not named Corey probably wouldn't do that. But I mean, it's even been great for friends, too. To be able to just call a friend up and say, hey, do you want an excuse to come talk and drink for a few hours? And they say, yeah, and you talk and drink for a few hours.
I love those different sort of ideas, you know, like the different reasons why people start podcasts. Because you're on the show, Couch Chats was started because we had a group of artists, essentially, that nobody knew anything about.
Right.
I call it the Katie Gilchrist, syndrome of you see someone standing on stage, you're just like, oh my God, they're so good. Yeah. Oh, great, I've seen them around. But you don't know them.
Right.
Like, you don't know anything about them. You don't know a thing. And we, Courtney and I, were speaking so much about the fact that these were some of the people who were sitting on our couches and sitting in our room. And so, and we think they're fantastic people.
Right.
So the general public should also get to know some of the weird, quirky things. And I think that helps connect us and make us a better community whenever we're all actually more approachable.
Yeah.
Because I don't give a shit about, like, celebrities, to be honest. Like, whether I've been fortunate enough to have dinners with celebrities, and maybe it's just like that veil has been broken, but I don't care what you're doing up on that stage.
Right.
I care about what your day-to-day, like, humanitarianism that you have out there. And so I'm really glad that we have this forum, because we are on, like, what, 64 now or something?
More than that, I think. Yeah, and maybe,
It's just insane
like
that
12 or 13 episodes into season 2, so
that we get to do.
You have enough to have 2 seasons. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was sort of really started by our, what we will call our sort of producer, which is KOJH, which they said that they would like, they were starting a radio station and essentially wanted programming for an hour a week. Originally, we didn't know if we would be doing this every day. There was a time that we thought that we were almost going to have a daily, morning show.
There's just no way.
Yeah,
no.
And we couldn't even figure out how to get that into our schedule at all.
Yeah.
I mean, an hour, honestly, which is about what we have with each one of these podcasts, is in itself almost like all we get in a week. So
because
really,
you know, it's like you record for an hour, but then you're, you know,
editing for
stuff. So it's not actually just an hour.
Yeah, and mine's super raw, too. I mean, I tell everybody who comes on, they're like, so do you edit this? Because you might want to edit this minute out. It's like, no, I pretty much just let it go. Man.
Yeah.
If you slip up, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Make sure you know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I do love about the why you guys started this is you created a way to publicly become somebody's advocate.
Yeah.
Like, you basically created a public forum yourself and brought them up with you. And I think that's awesome to actually be able to advocate on behalf, because that's really what you do here anyway. You know, people might be here, they might have spaces, they might rent, but at the same time, like, their success, like, your success and their success are tied. It's not mutually exclusive. So it's really
this was your first time to the Arts Asylum?
Yeah.
See, and that's another thing that the podcast does as
well,
is we get people, we literally say, you have to come to our home, similar to you.
Yep.
And then we get to give a tour, and I think it was 2 or 3 ago, we had a guest on, and now we've booked 2 shows with them.
Mm-hmm.
Literally just because they came through the doors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Arts Asylum is a crazy place. I'm really glad that, you know, from essentially something that you Google searched, now you are in it, and, like, you kind of just got a quick tour of the madness around this.
And it is amazing when you reach out. I mean, that should tell us a lot about, you know, just ourselves in general, is the moment that you reach out to somebody, even if you don't think that that's an individual that you might agree with, like, hang out with on a Saturday morning, something like that, a lot of times you'll find, like, they could become your biggest advocates.
Yeah.
I mean, the ability to come on, have a conversation, relate to somebody, and even if, you know, it's somebody that's not going to come back here, one of your listeners might hear it and say, like, I want to see what they're interested in. I want to see what this is about. So I think that's one of the coolest things, is just how many different, how many different hands you can have out in different buckets.
Yeah.
You can't have enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
that's
a line from Angels in America. When I come back again, I want to be an octopus.
Yeah,
so you just have all sorts of hands out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're also a realtor, is that correct?
Yeah, I just switched to Remax.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting transition. I started with Keller Williams, and then that was more of just I don't know what I'm doing in this industry, and I have to have my license somewhere. So I pretty quickly got out of that and went to a small brokerage. My brother actually recruited me to come work for him at a new home construction brokerage. So that's pretty much all we did. We did resale in Kansas City, and then I worked new construction. So it was probably 80-20 on what we actually do. It was mostly new construction. Now we just switched to RE/MAX because there were a couple of things going on, and the brokers that we were at is a wonderful brokerage, it's a great family. It was very limiting.
Yeah.
And so now I feel like I'm trying to think of the line. I'm going to sound like an idiot. I'm trying to think like kind of having to like drink the ocean. Like I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose.
Oh, sure.
Because when I went from two small brokerages where I spent, you know, 7 years to RE/MAX, I feel like like somebody that was just introduced to the internet.
Right.
What the fuck
what
is this?
Is all of this? Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm constantly right now just looking at tools and trying to go through it. I'm just like, I didn't realize how blind I was at a small brokerage when I did that. And that's me, you know, advocating for RE/MAX too, but there's also expense there. I mean, it's a larger brokerage. You have to pay for those things. But man, when you're talking about, you know, client relationship management, email, marketing, you're doing all of that on your own at a small brokerage. There's no tools.
Yeah.
And here, once you list a property, they basically populate all of this marketing material. So you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yep.
Right.
And it's like, as long as you are willing to put in the work, you're going to get leads and you're going to sell houses.
Yeah.
But whew, I'm lost right now. Mm. So I think we've been here 2 weeks and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, I think I've scratched the surface and that's it. So yeah, scratch surface.
So what brought you into real estate?
It was kind of the love of numbers because my wife and I started investing in property. And I was getting a little annoyed, and this might have just been who was helping me on it. But we would find, you know, we would call the brokerage office where the house was listed. I would get an appointment with that broker. And then I would basically have to fill out all the paperwork myself. I'd have to do everything myself, negotiate myself. And it was just basically through the mouth of them. So I'd say, here's what you need to do. And then they'd go do the exact same thing I told them and just relay information. I was getting really annoyed because that takes time. And if you don't find a good realtor, then it's not fast.
Right.
So I basically got licensed as an FU to other realtors.
I think that's right. I was going down that adventure.
Yeah.
Also named Alex.
Oh, there you go. Similar name, similar personality, similar reasons for getting into the industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Theater people in real estate. And ironically, there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
I know a lot of my fellow performers or artists that also dabble in the real estate side as their other job.
Yeah.
And it really isn't surprising because you're talking about kind of telling people about yourself, and that's one thing that artistic people are very good at.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to lift them up a little bit more, but especially if you're on stage, it's like, I'm me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, in the investment side of things, it allows you to be creative, but with a different kind of outcome, you know, like, because we have way too many properties to even count but at this point, because I'm not even sure that I know about all of them.
I've
always said you can't get on me for shoes because he impulse buys houses. So it's
that's
fine.
Awesome.
But it's like a good creative outlet when you're doing, like, you know, flipping or any of that kind of stuff that's not the same as this world. That, you know, that isn't the same as painting on canvases or whatever. It's a fun. I love real estate. I have no idea about, like, the back end of it. The finance part is where I'm like, that's where I'm done, but I'll pick colors.
But you need both sides of that brain, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is great at that, and I am good at the other. We're in the middle of flipping a property right now that I just got my countertops and my backsplash in, and it's so good.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. It's like, especially when you're flipping a property, because you get to see that thing start and end. Like, I feel like there's so many things that I miss about theater, because you would go through the audition process, and then you'd have rehearsals, and then you'd do the performance, and then it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, for better or for worse, then it's done, so you move on to the next thing, but you get to mentally take a break and say, like, I completed something, I'm proud of it. Like, there are a lot of industries, and my wife is an attorney, my mom she's a marketing consultant, and they, like, every day it's something new. Like, there's never one completed thing. Like, you would think, okay, well, this case settled, or we went to court, neither won or lost, but there's another one right there waiting for you. So,
and in fact, you probably should have been working on that one while the other one was finishing up.
Exactly,
The bleed over, it just seems crazy. I'm, you know, currently in the process of, like, getting ready to look for another house and do all this stuff, and it's just all of those things that I guess I sort of feel like what people say about theaters, you have no idea what goes on before you actually get to rehearsal started. And now, like, realizing just everything that goes into, after talking with Alex about just, like, what a realtor actually does.
Yeah.
It's just, it's insane what you all have to do on a daily basis. Yeah. And if you're not out there almost hustling yourself, you don't get work.
No, you don't get fed.
It's just like an actor, right? Like, yeah. you every day sort of have to wake up and manage your time in your world to make sure you can keep up with the lifestyle that you want to have.
Well, it's a really interesting industry because I don't think, because there are so many realtors, there are so many part-time people that do it, that it's an industry where you can get really behind really fast. Obviously, I'm dealing with the technology side, but just, I had a friend who went into she sent me a contract because they were going to put the contract together themselves. They didn't want to use me. They thought they were going to get a little bit more money off. It's fine. But she sent me the contract and said, hey, can you just look over this? And there was an issue that was an FHA violation. Yeah. And if you do that, that's $10,000 immediately. Okay. That's not even them looking over the paperwork. That's an FHA violation. It's like, that's what we're paid for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we do that.
There like, that's, right.
Yeah, that's...
I'm H&R Block. I'm going over your
exactly, taxes, yeah. So, I'm your personal E&O insurance. Like, yes. Errors and omissions are all on me so that I don't get... Like, you don't get fined. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's really what it is. It's like, it's almost a protection mechanism. Like, yes, absolutely. You can get into houses. Yes, you're licensed. Yes, you're trusted. But all of the paperwork that you have access to, all of the knowledge that you gain, that's where you really make your money. That's why you make your money.
Yeah.
But there are some people with really big personalities that get out there and they get ahead of themselves and they might have a ton of success marketing, but you need to set it up like, okay, you go get the business and have a team that handles it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So.
Yeah. I just love that you're learning a brand new world that you sort of already knew about.
Yeah. And I really like my, and this is the reason that the whole 10 tabs open thing started was because I was talking to my brother, we were having a conversation, and I made the comment that I always have 10 tabs open on my computer, mm-hmm. because I'll go down a rabbit hole. Like, I can't not
learn something. I love that idea.
Yeah, and when I pull up my phone, it's embarrassing when I look through, like, my internet history, and there's, like, 50 tabs. Mm-hmm. It's like, why was I looking up Willem Dafoe the other day? Like, how did I get in this rabbit hole? Yeah, like, what was going
on? In between two other things.
Yeah,
that you're like,
exactly, yeah. So it was, yeah. I mean, everybody, my wife and I work out Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 a.m., and Lee Summit, and my trainer just always makes fun of me because, like, they'll talk about a subject, and it's like, oh, yeah, and so I heard about this. Like, what do you do all day?
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's not day. Normally it's at night because I can't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's Wikipedia.
It's a dark rabbit hole.
Oh, I have been. I don't know if I should open up my
tabs. No. Yeah. Not the history, at least.
Definitely not that history. So when was the last time you were on stage?
Last time I was on stage was Cat on the Hot Tin Roof with Ray. And that was, I played Brick, fun role. When you're already kind of on the edge of being an alcoholic, Brick is a real fun role to play. It's like, I drink too much. What should I do? Play Brick. He drinks all the time. So whole show, you're drinking, you know, whiskey, which for us was iced tea, which was always bad because he drinks so much on the show, and our director, Greg Chafin, who I think you know, he basically was just kind of like, yeah, however you feel it, you would drink. And it's like, oh, me? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm like running to the bathroom after every single act. Like, just had to sprint because I had to pee so bad. But no, it was a fun play. I was kind of cast, I don't want to say out of desperation, but it was one of those things where he had seen people that auditioned and he just wasn't seeing what he liked. Mm-hmm. And my friend Kristen Henning, who I just actually had on my podcast, and Mike Beam sent me a message, and they both said, like, if you have any time whatsoever, you need to try this.
Yeah.
And so I did, and loved the role.
I loved Mike Beam so much.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a cool dude.
Yeah, I just saw him the other day. He had a couple of questions about the podcast, because I really wanted him to come on, and he wasn't sure if he wanted to do it, so I did convince him, so hopefully in the next couple of weeks he'll come on. But, talk about Ray having knowledge and going everywhere. Mike's the exact same way.
Yes.
It's like, you know, he auditioned for parts. I remember he told a story when we were in high school, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it was the individual who played the father in Little House on the Prairie.
Okay.
I think he had an audition with him, and he didn't get the role because he was too tall. And that guy was apparently, like, you know, 3'3" or something like that. Mm-hmm. He was like, looked ridiculous, me walking next to him. They're like, no, we're not going to, you know, dig a trench for you to walk in the whole time. We're just going to cast somebody else. But you hear stuff like that. It's like, what brought you to Raymore?
Exactly. I've always, you know, all the listeners out there, and especially my parents, like, they love, like, Mr. Beam. He comes down here. I just talked to him probably a week ago, and him and I still have to get a production of Bat Boy up and running. We've been talking about doing that. He did that.
Loves that show.
Yeah, he does. He did it in Raymore, you know, back in the day with Jared.
Mm-hmm.
From In Trousers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What the hell's his last name? Oh, I just lost
Jared Hill?
Thank you.
Oh, my God. I wanted to say Hill, and then I was like, is that a TV
person? I always remember,
it sounds like it.
And his twin sister, Jess. Jenna, I think.
Yep.
Jenna Hill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, wonderful. He's a twin? People.
He has a yep. twin sister. Yeah.
That is fascinating as all get out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's and we know his dad
yes.
very well, who is a drag queen in town, Loretta Martin.
Is he really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know yeah. that. Gotcha.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Hopefully I'll see her on Wednesday. I'm going to be like, I didn't know that Jared was a twin.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And right. I think they are from, like, JL, right?
Right,
like, I think that's, like...
JL, that's weird. Loretta.
and we always sort of talked about that, too, how weird that had to be for Jared to have a drag queen mother. Father.
Yeah. When we were hanging out a lot, like we hung out for a couple of years after high school, just like seeing each other at Trace Hanley's house or something like that. But
are they married?
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, they're married.
They are. And so we go over there and just every once in a while run into him and talk to him and everything. I love the guy to death. I was always better friends with Trey, but Jared was normally around, especially in late high school. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we went to elementary school together. I was a year above him. So yeah, it was. Known him forever.
The world is so tiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, I never would have known that. Yet I in some peripheral way, I've known you for 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, you said you're like, I was at all of the Guys and Dolls cast parties. All like, then we met.
Yeah. Like, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I saw and was involved with many productions at RayPack. That was one of the cool things is that Mr. Beam and I, for some reason, connected, and he just would invite me to come and sit at his rehearsals with him, and I would just be chilling.
And yeah, he is the most inviting person ever. Like, if you're in his circle, if he appreciates you because he either sees something in you that is just either, you know, personally positive or you're a hard worker, whatever it might be, he's the first person to just grab you and want you to be closer to
and
him.
And he's the one who taught me that it's okay to bring people into your world. Yeah. Like, it is okay to say, hey, come and sit with us, you know?
Yeah.
If you're not a stranger, and you seem like someone who wants to learn, and you're not going to be disruptive, you're not going to be annoying. And so that sort of personality, I think I've also tried to find in other people in sort of that way of that I feel like Mr. Beam sort of paid it forward with me in different ways, and so I hope that I can pay it for it. I mean,
well, you guys are doing a pretty good job.
We're standing 35,000 square feet of paying it forward, right?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. It's crazy. We just had our 10th anniversary, technically, but... I mean, almost. We're getting close.
December.
Yes,
December.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I see from this place that's missing is you guys have to have a rooftop deck.
That's, you know, when we bought the building, Alex was convinced that we needed to put a green roof on the top in order to for insulation and, and all of this wonderful stuff. And I was like, all right, but what about mini golf instead?
I would love that.
Because then we have, you know, not just like wonderful contributing to the environment prairie grasses, but also a good time.
Exactly.
We just don't know how to get people up there.
Yeah.
Right now, it's a cruise ship ladder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Covered, honestly, in pigeon shit.
Yeah, don't want to go there.
No,
yeah.
But no. People do. You would be surprised how many people want to go up
to that. I've heard
the views
up there are the greatest on the planet.
I didn't realize where exactly you guys were, because when it shows up at, you know, at your location, I'm looking, I know exactly where that is. Why can I not picture that building? And when I pulled up on, I think it's 9th, when I pulled up on there, I couldn't believe it. It's like, there's... What is that? 1121 Oak. There's the courthouse. I mean, that's you just look right onto the loop, and that's amazing.
It is
a beautiful view.
Yeah, I've heard it's gorgeous up there. I have not been up there, but everybody that I know is like, oh no, I mean, like you should have yoga up here. You should have, you know, because the view is just like 365. I mean, all the way around, it's amazing.
Well, we have an internet company that uses our roof solely because we are like the highest point east of downtown.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. And so the radio station.
And the radio station. That's how that conversation started. They house out of the Mutual Music Foundation.
Okay.
And we are one of the highest points that they could hit a radio. Mm-hmm. So we have made a lot of friends just because.
Location.
Yeah. And the location, I mean, we are pretty much the only functioning business here that's 24 hours outside of the social services that are around us.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah.
We at some points definitely are an epicenter of.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to open a coffee shop or a restaurant, please just open it down the street from here.
You'll have several offices worth of business just down there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just get there.
Yeah.
Because we're all open during the day. It's just at 5 o'clock. I've got rehearsals
down.
We have 300 people in here almost, you know, every weekend that are literally looking for something to drink or eat.
Yeah.
And I just am trying to engage. Listeners, please, you know, help us. Yeah. We could work together.
Well, it's nice because it's an opportunity in my mind. Like, you are across from downtown, and I think that's always been the issue with West Bottoms, is that you're not in the loop, and that epicenter is so small.
Yeah.
It's my least favorite thing about this city. I love Kansas City. I'm its biggest advocate. I always am just talking it up. Except for the loop.
Yeah.
Because I absolutely hate the fact that rather than just having one straight shot, 8-lane, and have a decent downtown, our downtown is completely cut off from Crossroads, from this side, from the West Bottoms.
There's one-way streets that get you nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Kristen, the one that I had on this last show, she and I went to State Fair Community College together, and we did theater there under Eric Azell. And she and Tim Wells, I gotta give him credit too. He was always, I think I was in the first show of his and not the second one that we had together. I was like his assistant director at the time. But she came here for, I think, one of her master's degrees. And she was telling me, like, I'm really happy that I had the Sedalia stop first, because her high school is Skyline, which is basically Springfield, Sedalia, right in the center, just central Missouri as it gets. Mm-hmm. And she was like, so she graduated with like 6 people and had 42 in her high school.
Mm-hmm. Holy moly.
Yeah. She went to Sedalia and was like, this is a metropolis. Right. What is going on? I can't believe it. And then came to Kansas City and was like, I can never live here.
Right.
Like, it's just, if one-way streets were killing her, she couldn't find anything. She's like, I literally got to the point where towards the end of the master's degree, I was just going across one road, getting to school, coming back, and never driving because of that. Alex, so if you're not used to it,
all Alex's roommate in college was from Holden, Missouri.
Yeah, that's where my dad went to high school.
Yeah, and he chose UMKC because 50
yeah.
like runs into UMKC.
Yep.
So he only had to know one road to get back home. No, he was like, I only have to travel on one road ever. And I mean, I remember that because Alex,
it does.
My Alex is so from St. Louis, and so when he first got there, he was like, okay, well, you're from closer, like, where can we go grocery shopping or whatever? They're going to be in the dorms at UMKC. And Chad convinced them that they needed to go to, I don't even remember what, some Walmart out 50, where that was the closest thing. Alex is like, this cannot be the closest grocery store. And he was like, it's the only one I know how to get to. It's all just one road. Yeah. That's it.
I
never want to travel anywhere else. But, you know, hey, now they've got, the Whole Foods across the street. He could have walked
there.
I don't know.
The war, it's just so, because I grew up in, Lee Summit, you know, and all, you as well, you grew up out there, and it's just so weird to see, that I thought Lee Summit was doing pretty good when I lived there.
Yeah.
And now I roll out there, and I'm like, it's exploded. They're talking about building a brand new shopping center, I think, across the street from, John Knox Village or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there is just so much happening from what I felt was kind of a booming small town back in 2001, and now it's just not even...
Yeah, it's huge.
It's not even the same place.
Yeah, we live in the south side of it, and we also used to live in the north side of it, so we've been on both. And so that north-south section of 470...
Right.
Growing up, that was just farmland. I mean, it was like Raymore, down the street where were cows and a gravel road, and we kind of had one of the only subdivisions in Raymore. Then the real estate, eventual crash, but the boom happened, and it was like Raymore just became one giant subdivision. That was really all it was, because one city got all the businesses, we got all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've had to just continue to throw out elementary schools and middle schools, and they wonder why their high school's exploding. Mm.
It's because everyone's around
there. Yeah, we have 15 elementary schools.
Does anyone actually live in Peculiar?
More now.
Yeah. I always used to think that was so funny, too. You know, because it was called Ray Peck, and so I was like, is there even enough people around to fill the Peck side?
Not really.
Yeah.
But it was always, whenever you see and you're that young and you go to a different school, especially one that's in your district, they're always kind of aliens to you. Who are you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of get shoved together in middle school, and it's like, oh, you're a really fun person, but there are 12 of you.
They're all 12 of you. My husband went to a small town, too. His graduating high school class was 11, so...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, you know...
Yeah, well, you guys have giant schools out there, though.
I have, like 1,000 at least some of them. It was the other way, where I just hope to know most of them by the time I left there.
Yeah, I mean, we were one of the smallest classes in years. I don't think they've had a smaller class since ours, and we were 376.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
high school is only 400, so...
Yeah.
But, I mean, I grew up here, and, I grew up in Kansas City, but I grew up, a block and a half from UMKC, And I think the first time I was in Lee Summit was with you. So, but I also went to Catholic school, so I didn't have the like mixing of like I didn't know like, even our basketball teams and stuff like that. Like we didn't play. We had played other Catholic schools, so I didn't know anybody. I knew some kids in like the Shawnee Mission East. You know, like
it's
just
so to, weird that you're a Catholic school girl.
Yeah, you know, it just
you ran as far away from that as you possibly could.
I sure as and as quickly as possible. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I was with the same 30 kids from, you know, kindergarten until I graduated high school.
Which can be either really good or awful.
Oh, terrible. We were in group therapy by our grade. I'm not kidding. They're like, actually, they were like, this class is so, we were terrible to each other. Because it's essentially just how you have 30 siblings, basically, at that point. You know what I mean? When you're with somebody from like your five all the way through, and then you throw hormones into the mix, no, fuck off. Like, it's, there's still kids that I'm like, I'm sure that after 35 years we have grown, but I don't care, don't look at me, don't talk to me, I hate you.
You're so friendly.
Right, we were terrible to each other.
Yeah.
And they did put us in group therapy. We had to make a quilt.
A quilt?
As like our 8th grade year, like we had to make like some sort of
like
that or something.
Amazing. That's just dumb.
Yeah,
silly.
Yeah, uh-huh. Terrible.
And you guys did theater there, right? You had a small little theater.
We did. Well, Theater at Viz is still a pretty big, like...
Visitation, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Theater at Viz, they have a big summer program for all the way through high school. We had decent theater. I played Little Cindy Lou Who at one point when I was still, like, on stage. And then St. Teresa's has a decent theater program. That's where I got into, you know, the theater that doesn't involve being on stage, because I don't want to do that.
Backstage, girl.
Backstage, yeah.
I can't wait to get you both on stage together.
Absolutely. You can get on stage all you want to.
I love it. I tell people all the time, it's like, if you put me in a room, and this is obviously not this kind of situation, but business or anything else, like if you get me in a room with like 1 to 5 people, that's when I'm nervous, but you could put me on a theater in front of 1,000, I'm just like, I'm good. Makes me happy. Yeah.
I might have a play that I need you to audition for.
Sounds good.
Keep working out, though. They gotta be buff.
Huh? Oh, they're big. I'm too fat. I know how to stop it. I just stop drinking.
Yeah. Who wants to
stop drinking and eating pizza all the time? I'll probably shrink it down.
No, I don't want to do either
all
of those.
All the joys
things.
In life.
Yeah.
So,
if you're just tuning in, we are talking with Alex right now. So I love to do that in case you're just popping in. So yeah, so it's just so, it's so fun to try to engage people, because I know that right after you leave here, there's going to be another, like, connection between us. Or I'm literally going to get your ass on stage. I feel it.
Cool.
I feel like the cosmos have always put people in this, on this couch, because they're...
Don't get too crazy. We may start you on Saturday.
You sing, right?
A little. I haven't sang in years. I mean, outside of, like, jamming out in the car, I haven't sang in years.
We start rehearsals for Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, wow.
This coming Saturday.
That's a singing one.
It is. We cast last October.
November.
The show, and from that we have had just interesting scheduling conflicts.
Of course,
up since then. Our core base is still pretty strong, but over the last like 2 weeks, as it gets closer, where everyone's really starting to focus on the project and realizing, oh shit, like we start rehearsal in 5 days. Like when this airs, we will have started rehearsals in 3 days.
It's true.
Nice.
Yes, Kyle will be in town by that point.
Yeah, Kyle Hatley, he was the former assistant artistic director of The Rep. So we brought him in to direct this show. You'll have to come see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty amazing.
That's
for sure.
That's kind of one of the mainstay shows. This is embarrassing to admit this, but that's one of the mainstay shows that I have never seen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know the story.
Yeah.
You're familiar.
Yeah. You know.
He is a superstar. Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. It's one of my favorite shows. It might be one of the first shows that I ever saw that I was like, this is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know, this like Superstar and Phantom were my two. Those were my gateway drugs of like, I think I'm fascinated by this process. What is happening here?
Yeah.
Well, Jesus Christ Superstar, in particular, Jesus Christ Superstar, I loved it because I didn't feel like I was going to church.
Yes.
But, like, see, you know, they were just people that they were taught, you know, inside of this. As, like, Godspell is obviously just, like, storytelling, and so that's another one of those. And Children of Eden, I think, is one of my favorite scores. So there's all of these sort of, like, faith-based musicals, and I think that Jesus Christ Superstar is probably the most... approachable one for everyone, because it doesn't quite hit you over the head the same with all of, like, the Bible stories as those other ones do. You can come into Jesus Christ Superstar and sort of just accept the stories, which I think is why it is a show that can appeal to all audiences.
Right.
And not just... because some people, I think, are scared of, like, just going to see a church musical. I'm not explaining that correctly, but...
well, I mean, I think it's, you know, Godspell is like the parables, and, you know, Children of Eden is all like super wrath of God. You know, like there's a lot of like...
God evidently was very angry.
Old Testament very God, angry. Yeah. Old Testament God's terrifying.
He was... So much smiting.
Yeah.
He was so mad at everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, can't we like wear glitter and like sing and dance?
Which is,
exactly.
It's definitely the rock musical, and I think, I don't remember who, we were talking to someone from the show on a podcast talking about the fact that, like, it's really because of the slice of life that it's only, like, the last 2 weeks before the crucifixion, and then it ends with the crucifixion. There's really not much of the, like, turning water into wine, you know, like, none of that really exists in the show, so it's really just, like, here's this dude who has a conflict with his dad, and... has, you know, and has people who are following him and what he does with that. It's not, you know, you don't have any of, most of the rest of the stuff came post-crucifixion.
Yes.
The, I don't know what I, the, I don't, magic. The jazz fingers. Yeah, the magic. The, who knows, the myth
I
stuff.
Love that Jesus Christ Superstar sort of replaced the Ten Commandments for Easter now. Now they play
Thank
it.
Thank God.
On
it's the one that's more appropriate.
Yes.
Or Ten Commandments, like... Ten Commandments, and what was the other one that they would always show where you're just like, that's not the story we're telling. Why is this what we're watching?
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I never
John Legend did a pretty good job, though, with the version.
Sarah Bareilles did a fantastic job.
So you just say that in general. Sarah Bareilles did a fantastic job. In what? Just life.
Are you a fan of her?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think this is because I'm getting old. And I'm starting to just be the old man that doesn't want people on his lawn. But I have
Well, you have a very pretty lawn.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I wasn't doing much to it at the time. The builder's responsible for it, but thank you. But, I've definitely transitioned in the way that I listen to music. Because I always just used to be like, I like the beat, I like this. Like, it makes me happy. That's all I care about. Mm-hmm. And the older I get, the more I listen to the words and things like that, which is what annoys me so bad about music that comes out right now. So when you have an artist like her that is still putting out great music, love to call it out. Because, like, the whole... I mean, one of the biggest annoyances for me is, like, the mumble rap thing right now, where you can't hear what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And
but
to
they
me,
do, though.
They do. They hear it in there. It's like speaking in tongues at that point. Yeah. But it's always weird for me just because it's like... And my wife and I had a really... This is the weird conversations that my wife and I have. They're like, why is that? Like, what is it about? And I really think it's more because, like, of the club scene. Like, they finally figured out, like, we're not just going to listen, you know, to great music that's on the radio now. We're actually making music so that it will be played.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when you get to that point, then it's all about beat. Because nobody is listening to the words in the club like, man, that just really hit me in the heart. Mm-hmm. Like, this is more just like, I'm grinding and I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. But so. I definitely love that approach. I mean, I want to sit around and listen to intelligent poems inside of music all the time. But when I'm out dancing, I don't know if I necessarily... need to feel the whole story.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Yeah.
And again, I think this is me becoming an old man, too, because I don't do that anymore.
Like, get out of your house, Alex.
I'm old and boring. I know. Well, when I get out of the house, it's like I literally just, like, we have the kids and everything like that, so when it's just my wife and I've been amazed the last couple of years at how much I just, like, love conversations. Mm-hmm. And just, especially between us, because there's a reason I married her. She's my favorite person. Mm-hmm. But when you have two kids that are screaming, running around, and you're trying to parent and do all those things, like, you realize how much you don't converse.
Yes.
And so making sure that we do that is important. So that's what I mean. It's like, I'm just becoming old. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm becoming, you know, I'm transitioning into the dad role, and it's a very strange time.
It is.
You have both of your kids had a very interesting birth? Or?
Yeah, my second was a little, he made things a little easier, but they were both premature. Mm-hmm. And my second, we kind of knew what was happening. So he was born 6 weeks early, and my wife had actually, from the first one, which I'll get to in a second, from the first one, she was getting shots. I'd have to give her a shot every week, and that just kind of kept everything regulated. So when she had to be in the hospital for a week, we were both horribly sick. Like, they basically had to warden off our room because we got some, it was the flu, I don't know what it was, but just headache, couldn't breathe, coughing, couldn't think. And she's pregnant. Like, I got off easy because I didn't wasn't growing a person.
Right.
But she basically went to the hospital for a week, kept dilating, and then stopped. And they basically sent us home for, like, she had an appointment the next day. So they sent us home. They're just like, don't do jumping jacks, but keep walking around and see if we can get that thing out of there. So we came back, and they had measured my second, whose name is Archer, at like 4.5 pounds or something like that, which was larger than my first kid. So we were like, 4.5, all right.
Yeah.
He was born at 6.5. It wasn't that they mismeasured. He's just kind of a chunk.
Sure.
So he came out at 6.5, and they were like, well, sometimes that means that they won't go home for a while because, like, the big ones kind of trick you.
Sure.
He didn't. He was breathing on his own. He was eating on his own. Like, he was there for a week, and we were gone.
Yeah.
My first one was tough. So it was obviously first kid. You know, we're looking at everything. And one night, my wife came to me and was like, something's wrong. Like, I'm bleeding. Something's going on.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, let's, you know, we packed up our stuff, went to the hospital. It's storming already. We get to the hospital, pull in, get her up there. And as they are checking her, one of the things that they did ended up puncturing her amniotic sac. So we didn't know it at the time, but that basically means you're not going home.
No, you're not going
home. Yeah. So, you know, first time parents were like, does that mean magic? What's going on?
Yeah.
And anyway, we basically, I got really mad with the nurse and her first frustrated with the nurse. And so they ended up replacing the nurse in the middle of this. Like, we came in and it was ridiculous. It was horrible, horribly sad, because when we walked into the maternity ward, there were people making like unhuman noises down the hall. And I think it's because they lost their child.
Aww.
So it was, that was how it started. Mm-hmm. And so we get to our room on the complete opposite side. That happens. They replace the nurse. Well, unbeknownst to us, like, the storm that was bad before is now going to become
a tornado. Summit?
2 weeks later was the tornado. We were in the microburst.
Oh, no.
So we, like, all of a sudden, all the lights go out and the emergency lights come on. We're like, oh, for God's sakes.
So you don't need any help making this.
Yeah, I was like, Alex Howe can't procreate. Stop.
Yes.
Learn. Get out of here. So anyway, so we, that happens. They basically, they don't have a NICU at St. Luke's East, so they put us in an ambulance, drive us.
You're literally right across the street from my parents' house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. Yep. Yeah. So they put us in the ambulance. Funny side story, the guy, as my wife is being loaded up, you know, this would be, I guess, 12 and a half or 13 weeks early.
Wow.
The guy looks at me and he's like, hey, you in the ambulance, do you want to flip the lights on? It's like, I'm not 12. Get my wife.
Right, exactly.
Like, I know he was trying to be nice, but it was like, this wrong moment.
Yeah. So, you're like, hey, if it'll get us there quicker. Yeah.
So anyway, he takes off. We're driving 470 to 71 Highway. We go to St. Luke's on the Plaza. The entire way, there are no street lights.
Oh, my God.
No street lights. Our lights are the only things on in Kansas City. So we pull in. They get us up. This is probably 3:30 in the morning at this point. And then we just wait. They take tests. But really, it was just waiting. And we had been waiting to call family, too, because we're like, everything, like, they can't do anything.
Right.
Let them sleep. I'm not going to call my mom and give her a heart attack at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So, finally, 5 o'clock rolls around, which we know most of them are getting up at that point anyway. Mm-hmm. So, we start calling. Everybody, you know, different levels of panic.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents get there first. My dad, I guess, stepped out of the room and was in tears because he's like, he's too little. He's way too little.
Mm-hmm.
So, they tell us, you're here. We're hoping for 7 weeks because at that point, you're far enough along where we feel like we can induce.
Right.
Fuck. Okay. I guess this is our life.
Right.
So for 2.5 weeks, including the tornado that went, I decided to go home that day get some stuff. Mm-hmm. And the tornado blew through Lee Summit, as we live in northern Lee Summit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm stuck away from my wife then, get back to the hospital. And basically for 2.5 weeks, nothing happens. Like, we're just she's on a bed, I'm on the pullout, everything's fine.
Right.
The morning of, and this is why I always tell people, it's like, nurses are one of the, you know, a very underappreciated industry.
Yes.
But they are still, like, some of them can still be guilty of not being the best.
Also that.
Unfortunately, in two separate instances when we needed to have the really good nurses, we didn't. And so they had a nurse that they put these monitors on you, on your belly, to read your heartbeat and the baby's. They put them on wrong one night. Okay. That night, my wife is in horrible pain. She keeps bringing the nurses in, and they're like, whoa, we have no idea. Every day, though, my wife would have to go down to the expert person that put these on. She puts them on and immediately is like, you are in full-blown labor. The baby's come today.
Yikes.
So they could have stopped it, but it was too far along at that
right.
point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So call everybody back in. And at 29 and a half weeks, my son was born at 3 pounds, 7 ounces, went down to 3.
Wow.
And so I was doing real estate at that time, had a couple of clients in the works, and I pretty much called my broker and was like, I'm done. This is my life now. So I stayed with him for a year and a half. I was a stay-at-home dad for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it was only because he started falling behind on the speech that I went back. Mm-hmm. And so we put him in daycare. That fixed that problem real fast. Yeah. So
that is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I mean, I know you have a crazy story. And, you know, there's obviously photos and stuff on your social media during that time. But I mean, that just sounds crazy.
Yeah. It was nuts. And it's weird to explain because we were very positive the whole time. Like, as crazy as that was, I think there's just that instinct that happens where it's like, I can't change this, so we're just going to be as positive as possible.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people have been like, yeah, our friends had a similar issue, but the baby was far, much further along than yours, but it seemed like you guys were okay. And it was like, yeah, pure panic, basically. Right. Like, our body just handled it differently. Our mental state handled it differently. But yeah, she stayed home, and then as soon as she went back to work, that was my job for a while.
Yep.
And that's pretty, I mean, the situation obviously, you know, is not the best, but it's awesome that you were able to sort of stop your life and make that life transition to your kid.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that, you know, not to get too political, but when all of that happened and I saw some of the results of the former president's bill, it really changed my mind because I was always like straight, like I ran as a libertarian for the 5th district. Mm-hmm. Like that's always been my mentality because I look at government as numbers. I don't look at any other part.
Sure.
In between, I think you and I spoke about this, but between theater and kind of, I never had an opinion on homosexuality because I was too young. Like I just didn't know. We were in Raymore.
Right.
But through theater, I meet Josh and I meet Jared and then eventually Trey comes out. Mm-hmm. It was like, I love every single one of these people. I want happiness.
Right.
Like what? And also, why does it fucking matter what I think?
Right.
Live your life, man. Have a great time.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I mean, so that was like, you know, just kind of one of those, you know, mind-opening experiences, and you know, I felt that way ever since. And again, like it wasn't like I came from a homophobic household. There was just nothing. There was nobody around like that.
Yeah.
So then that set my opinion straight. Before I had kids, I was one of those same people that was just like, you know, Obamacare is stupid. Mm-hmm. And then we went into it, and my wife and I are very lucky. My wife makes significant money. I make pretty good money. So that's never been our issue.
Yeah.
But the number of times that we have just looked at each other and went, how the fuck do people do this that can't afford this stuff?
I don't know.
Our child care is more than a mortgage.
Yeah.
Wasn't there two people, I mean, I think that was trending or whatever, who did a joint suicide because they couldn't pay for their...
Right.
For their medical bills,
it has a real human cost.
They were just like we're not in the mood to bankrupt our entire family and destroy everything that we've worked for.
Yeah.
We have to sell our houses, and so they did like this joint suicide because they couldn't pay their fucking bills.
Yeah, well, you can't have that.
I mean,
we shouldn't be so fucking scared to go get looked at that eventually it is the thing that kills you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I make. I don't make significant. I make okay. okay. I am doing okay today.
Right.
And I mean, disaster would probably destroy everything that I have.
Even if you were well off, that's the case. I mean, that's the thing of, you know, and things like that. I mean, that you're, you know, childbirth is supposed to be easy. I mean, it's supposed to be a thing that obviously it's been happening for hundreds of years without medical assistance.
It's how our species continues to thrive. Exactly.
I mean, it's one of those things that, like, you know, and I had a completely skewed version when I had, you know, when I had Riley, my oldest, who's a senior. It was just like, you know, I was 22, and I was just like, this is easy. Pregnancy's, you know, I had all this environments and everything's great. And then when I had Isabel, and there was just like thing after thing, and you know, we had to be induced, and I had to be, you know, and she was, I had to be induced, but we were 2 weeks early, because my blood pressure, and then, you know, they were making quick decisions because it was like, they checked me at 1 centimeter and I was like, all right, well, I got to go to the bathroom. And I shifted and my water broke and I was like, well, now we can't. Now I really have to go to the bathroom. So you clean that up and I'll be right back. It was like all in the midst of, they had checked me, my water broke. I went to the bathroom. I laid back down and was like, I need to push. And they were like, no, we just checked you. And I was like, I need push. And they were like, well, okay. And then she checked me again, and she was like, you're at 10. And I was So, I mean, in a span of, like, of course my husband had been there, passed out, and had, in that moment, been like, well, you're going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to go grab something to eat. Okay. And I was like, and, you know, St. Luke's on the Plaza is, like, a damned maze of madness. So, who knows where he was.
My mom and dad confirmed this because they listened, but I think my mom was something similar like that. My dad ran downstairs to get an iced tea, and it was we were game on.
And they were concerned that I was going to seize because it wasn't supposed, like, that was, they were concerned about the preeclampsia and all of that, you know, or I guess eclampsia at that point because I was in labor. But it was like from, you know, my water broke at 12:01, or my water broke at 11:50, and I had her at 12:01. Like, it was you know what I mean? Like, where, and so they were like, we've got to get her on this medic. And my doctor couldn't get there fast enough because they were like, she's at one, she's fine. And
then did they put the epidural on yet?
No.
Oh, God.
I know, I had all three naturally because they were.
Because Courtney's
like
that.
I was going to say, you're there's nothing I can compare. Like, I broke my arm in 12 places. Yeah, I gave birth to three kids without an epidural.
The third one was, like, my most normal pregnancy of, like I actually had time to progress and think about it and all of that kind of stuff. And I did. I was, like, I remember looking at Alex. It's really kind of the only thing I really remember about that day. And I was just like, this is when people get drunk, son. Like, I've never had the time to, like, think about it. And I was like, it's right now. And he was like, yep, it's right now. And I was like, all right, I'll push through. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. This is terrible.
I'm having pain now just thinking about your pain. Because I saw my wife had an epidural both times. Second one, the amount that they gave her was not... it wasn't what she wanted because the first time the guy was pretty much like, how much do you want? More fantastic.
See you later.
I've never been a confrontational person. Like, even when we, like, my wife and I have something where we have to be, she always handles it because I'm either a pansy, watch out for the boom. I'm either a pansy when it comes to stuff like that, or I'm emotional and fly off the handle, and there's no middle ground. I can't logically go through something.
Yeah.
And it's something I've tried to work on, but when you're married to an attorney that's really good at it, a lot of times you kind of handicap yourself because you're like, here, honey, sorry.
Yeah, yep.
You mean, Courtney's a paralegal. She's,
there you go, yeah. But, so we, when we did that, you know, we had a nurse that, like, things were progressing quickly when we had our first. Like, it wasn't, our second progressed quickly, but we kind of knew the process. The second, I kept asking, when's the epidural, when's the epidural? She's been in pain all night. When's the epidural, when's the epidural? And finally, she got to 9 centimeters dilated, and she's, you know, just kind of sitting there, kind of writhing, and I never do this. Like, I've never, ever used, like, I'm 5'11", I'm not a big, big person, but I've never, like, chested up on somebody, like, what are you doing? I went up to this nurse and used every bit of leverage that I had as far as size goes. Because, I mean, when, you know, somebody is in pain that you that you love, it doesn't matter who else is in the room. Like, Mother Teresa could have been there, I would have chested up on her. But I went up and I was like, I have been asking for this epidural for 4 hours. It's coming. She's like, well, she's 9, she's going. I was like, no, she's not. Get the epidural.
Get the epidural back.
Yeah, and so we get
you used your big boy voice.
I did. Yeah. And I was, she was probably 5 foot tall, and I still to this day feel awful because I really did go up and just, like, look down at her like, you're gonna get this.
You should find out who that was and write her a card. I am sorry for that moment.
She'd write me back like, which one of 50 were you?
Were you just in today?
But yeah, so they ended up bringing in, at the time, it was terrifying, but the guy ended up being very good. But they ended up basically bringing in the nurse that normally does it and the person she was training. And I was like, oh, perfect.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So I'm sitting on her side. She's laying on her side looking at me, and I'm just staring this guy down. Like, I swear to you.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I do not need any motivation right
now. No, not right now. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, he puts in the epidural, and my wife, within 30 seconds, is like, this is great. I couldn't feel anything. Once she's pushing, she would push, and then she leaned back at one point, like, okay, take a break for just a second. My wife looks at me, she's like, I don't know if I'm pushing or not. I can't feel anything.
No idea.
Yeah, so yeah, it worked out.
I would love to, I mean, not really, but I just think that would be such a cool experience to have a kid. I know biologically I can't, at least in 2019, but... who knows? Yeah. Technology could happen.
I'm glad you feel that way because I never want to. After seeing my two, I was just women who have kids are far braver than I will ever be.
I just want to know what that feels like to have a human. I don't know if I want to give birth, but I don't know if I'm going to give birth. But I just want to know what that feels like to grow.
That's the part
grow.
that I
the alien
so
exactly.
of like because with my first, I was convinced. I was like, put me in nothing short of just a coma, and there'll be a kid at the end. Like, all the drugs you could possibly give me is what I was convinced of. But I did the same thing where, like, it was my first time being pregnant. We happened to literally live, like, five houses down from the hospital. Oh. So I was just like, anytime something went on, I was like, is this it? Okay, I'm here. Yeah. And they just kept sending us home. And finally... The doctor was like, look, here's the deal. Your body knows what it's going to have to do. And yes, you're in labor. You're having contractions. But this is not the, like, just wait, basically.
Yeah.
And it was like, you have to go to sleep. You've been awake now for 48 hours. Oh, your body's not going to let you do this without getting some rest. Get some food into you, take a nap, we'll, you know, see where you are at that point. And so I was like, okay, so we go home. I don't know, ate some peanut butter crackers or something. And my husband is super tall. and he builds all of our stuff. So he had built our bed that was his height. And so I'm like trying to get into it and I swing my leg up and I'm jumping. And of course my water breaks.
Uh-huh.
He had just laid down and I was like,
hey, so no.
And I was like, oh, I know we were just all ready for a nap, but kidding, we're gonna go back. And so I go back into the hospital and I'm like, I know that this is the rule is you can't send me home now because my water broke.
Uh-huh.
And so I have to stay here. Like, now you have to monitor me. And they were like, okay, fine. So they put us in this room. They were like, we need you to take a nap because you're just at one. Like, it's fine. And I was like, okay. So I go in and I took a nap and I like laid there and probably maybe an hour and a half later, I was like, oh, I'm in some pain. This is terrible. Can you get me something for this? And they were like, nope, you got to get to the delivery room right now. You're at like 9. And I was like, oh, good, it's time for the drugs. This hurts. And they were like, nope, I missed a window. And I was like, I did what?
No.
And so, so I had to do it. But I remember just like, there is this insane, like the, I cannot even explain, like, that when that kid like comes out, the like collapse, the full body collapse of like nothing there anymore is the most amazing thing I've ever felt in my entire life.
That's
I was
awesome.
Just like, this is amazing.
I just can't imagine what that feels like.
Yep.
My mom always talks about it when she was carrying me, that it was like, it was neat. She was like, this is the baby. Oh my gosh, I'm growing a human inside of me. And she's like, it was the worst feeling ever once we had you, and it was like, this beautiful baby, and I get to hold you, and now he's resting. And she just, like, would poke her stomach, and like,
Yeah. You did this to me.
Just like, there's nothing
it's
in there now,
terrible.
So it's weird,
Because, at some point, it's so, like,
right,
it's
just, like, you could almost see it collapse
yeah.
in this, like, very science fiction, nothing is right about what has just happened, but it's the most amazing, like, just feeling of relief, because you're miserable for the last, like, 2 weeks beforehand. I mean, you guys didn't get to that place where it's like, I have a foot that's coming up out of my throat is what you feel, you know, where you're just like, it's all, get out of here. So it's,
I can't wait.
Yeah.
one day, there will be a scientist or maybe be able to, like, stimulate that. You know, with virtual reality or something.
Have you ever seen the video, like, the YouTube videos of people that do that? The men who, like, they get, I can't remember what
it contracts and does I have. Never mind. You're right. I don't want to do that.
No. They're writhing in pain. I'm just like, ha, 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 you're an idiot, because I never will do that. I give my wife all the respect and admiration and appreciation in the world, and I never want to know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. The fact that we did it twice is still beyond me.
Yep.
Like,
I just don't know where it will come out. Right.
Yeah. you don't want to know.
No.
That's pretty terrible.
But as a kid, I thought that men and women could both have kids. Like, when I was, like, really young. So I always, sorry, Mom and Dad. I just remember looking down one time and being like, I don't think that's going to work.
Uh-uh.
I don't think that's what that's supposed to come from.
No, thanks.
Because
appreciate
it's mind-blowing enough that comes out of that, let alone a two.
Yeah.
So our last section of this is sort of like the actor studio, where we just have a couple of questions for you, and we kind of get to wrap up and learn a little bit about you.
We get to wrap up. Shut the fuck up.
No, I'm always sad because this means that like our hour is almost done. So what is your definition of real magic?
The experience that you and I had with you reviewing was magic to me, because I like the sleight of hand card tricks, like what you traditionally think of as magic. It's like, that's all well and good, but really what that is entertainment, where I'm tricking you. But that to me is, because the, you know, the whole idea of how small this world is when you really get down to it. I mean, we have friends at the lake that lived catty corner from my house growing up and behind us growing up. We hadn't seen them for a decade. And all of a sudden, we're down at a dock party, and our friend that we knew down there that has a house near us, is actually my neighbor now, but at the time, was just in the same community. He was like, hey, I want you to meet these guys. This is Jeremy, AJ, and we're like, and Greg. Yeah, we fucking know who they are. Yeah. How the hell do you know these people?
I love
that. So moments like that to me are because it's, you start realizing that we're not, one, we're not different. We're not, you know, no, everybody is kind of the same person that they always have been. They've just grown. And two, how amazing is it that, you know, you're surrounded, how many people do you run into every single day? How many people are we surrounded by just in the city? And you find them at the lake, or they come over to your house and you can pull out the review that you just got 2 months
like
ago.
Like my words.
Yeah.
When I was 17 years old about, you know, yeah. Your face is just so... I'm glad I wrote something nice about you.
I think, too.
I think we had to look at that review really quick and be like...
Well, you stole it. Yeah. You ran over and grabbed it out of my hand like, hold on.
It's like, hold on.
Oh, my God.
Well, and I think it is one that my parents had up in my basement, because my parents at my... where I grew up had a lot of my Cappy reviews framed, because my parents are very cute.
Yeah.
And it was one that was like up there, and I was like, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
I never connected that.
And it's so, you know, it's you're not able to describe that feeling, because it's just like, how? Mm-hmm. How does this happen? Like, this makes no sense. There are too many people. But I mean, I do think part of it is I do reach out to a lot of people in theater. Mm-hmm. I love theater. It was one of my favorite times of my life. Was being able to just go on stage and be with those people, because it's the magic that is created within theater itself to me is amazing, because everybody from, you know, the director to people that work in the back to the people that are on stage, you're opening yourself up, especially, you know, I don't want to say especially actors, but like one thing that I do miss is like opening up that emotional range.
Yeah. It's all inside of you.
Yeah, exactly. So just being able to kind of project that rather than living in real life is sometimes fun.
I love imaginary life. I just came from imaginary life. I want to go back there.
Saturday. All right, you are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you, and why?
I heard this on one of the other podcasts, and I knew the answer immediately. Ocean blue. If I could be anywhere in the entire world, just put me by an ocean where I have a view, hear the waves, feel the, you know, smell the breeze, feel the breeze. I'm the happiest person in the world.
What stops you from having that?
Right now, family. Okay. Right now, it really is family. Like, my wife's work is, she works here, but she could also work at their office in Miami or LA or wherever it might be. What stops us is, like, my parents forever have always been, like, my best friends. Mm-hmm. They're not going to move. You know, and I would never, like, take the kids away from them to do that. If I could, we talk about it all the time. It's like, if I could make Kansas City oceanfront, mm-hmm. I'd have the perfect world. Yep. And I'd always have a house right there.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's all. But I mean, all of my favorite vacations, like even when we go somewhere, like we're planning a trip to Scotland, mm-hmm. I want to go see mm-hmm. the waves. I want to go see that look. You know, same thing with Ireland and everything else. It doesn't have to be warm.
Yep.
It just has to be the ocean.
I love the ocean.
Yeah.
Oh, that sound.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. I was just standing in Santa Monica like 2 days ago. I want to feel those
two
waves.
Months.
Yeah.
The 2 months.
The pulse of those waves, it is probably one of the most relaxing feelings ever. Maybe besides sleeping in a tanning bed. But that's its own.
Don't do that anymore.
What is something that you were told that you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or in the process of accomplishing?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I honestly don't know. I was raised with really, like, my parents were always really positive. It's like, my mom almost got in a fight when somebody, like, at her training class when I was in high school was like, you know, well, that's good that he's doing theater now. What's he going to do when he grows up? Yeah. And at that point, I was into it. I had a theater scholarship. I was going for it. I was trying to decide if I was staying, like, more local or if I was going to, like, go to a film school in New York. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't want to do that because I like the idea of having, like, the college education if something did fall through. But I was convinced, like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And at the time, and she got in a fight because this lady was like, so, you know, are you going to grow up? And she just was like, my son will do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So when you say that, it's like, I'm sure somebody along the line has made an offhand comment. but it never goes into my brain, which is probably why I feel spoiled all the time, because I always think that, like, I'm going to start a podcast for no reason and do it. I'm going to get my license on this subject. I'm going to do it. I'm going
to
research anything
I can. You seem to be someone who just does it.
Yeah.
So, and you're standing in a building of, I think, like-minded
people. Yeah, exactly.
Who just do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't buy a building at 9th and Trues to renovate it completely and make it this nice unless you have balls and ovaries of steel.
And I was very lucky, too. My parents have never asked me to change my path 1%. They were like, you 100% have to do you. And if, by chance, you're sleeping on the streets, you know, because of that, we might want to talk about why you're sleeping on the streets.
Exactly.
But maybe you're sleeping on the streets because you're so damn happy every day. Like, they took it all the way to me sleeping on the streets and getting to do what I want. I've said that about my husband, too. I'll sleep in a cardboard box if that's what we've got to get to. But as long as we are living the life that we want to live,
exactly,
I can live in that box.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, let's see. All right. You're invisible for 24 hours.
Oh, God.
What do you do with your time?
And teleportation is possible.
Teleportation.
You don't have to worry about flying.
Teleportation is possible. Oh, my God. If I'm invisible?
Yep. And you can
getting
put
in
yourself...
trouble, probably.
Yep. Katie Gilchrist, as we said the first one, said she would sit in the Sporting KC locker room and just watch.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Something similar to that, but with women, probably. Yeah. Yeah. My wife's going to listen to this and go, God damn it.
You're here to be honest.
Yeah. No, it would either be that or go see Hugh Jackman. That's pretty much it. He's he's my man crush.
He's coming through here.
I know. We already saw him in Boston before he booked the Kansas City date. Yeah, we took a trip to Boston, did that. Yeah, probably something inappropriate like that. Like, you know, cheerleaders, that kind of, you know, every 15-year-old boy's fantasy, something like that. Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to see the original Eliza here in September.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyson won us tickets.
He did. He's right. Yeah.
I thought that was really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. What is something from, like, childhood or movies that you thought was going to be a bigger problem than it is?
I thought everybody was going to offer you drugs.
That's mine. I thought the dare guy was going to stand on the side.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody in a trench coat, he would flash you and would also have heroin.
Yes.
Somehow. Like, you'd see everything that he had.
And just give it to you. Like, that was the thing. It always seemed like those scary people were like, have a little drugs, kitty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no one gives me free drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, and that to me is probably it. Because, like, there are things in my past I'm like, well, I can see where that probably would have been a problem. Like, I remember going, you know, like, actually having the experience of somebody, like, pulling up in front of our house and asking me and my friend when we were, like, 7, like, hey, can you tell me where this is? Come closer to the car, and just running inside. So I know that stuff exists. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the drug thing was the craziest one. And, like, I hang around people that smoke weed all the time. And I look at them now because, like, I have transitioned a bit to that side. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, why didn't you ever offer? Come on, man.
Because they don't.
No, yeah. Because they don't do it. Exactly. So that's the ultimate one. It's like, I expected drugs to be a much bigger issue than they are.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think our generation, like, because we were of, you know, the
severe,
the war on drugs,
just
you know,
drugs
beginning, but it was very, like, we had that.
And I literally just, and this is, you know, this is my mind fuck for whatever. Like, speaking of marijuana and stuff, like, I am always so crazy after I get back from a place that has it legal. Like, California, it's legal.
Yeah.
You know, like, whenever I get back from Colorado, I'm always, I just feel like I watch it not be a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, make it happen. Like, that's not our
solve the national debt with this.
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons that I actually loved the Libertarian Party. Now, since then, I've gone a little bit more progressive on some of my thinking, but some of it not. Mm-hmm. Because I talked about this all the time, and I know that it's in the media a lot right now, but libertarians are, fuck the rules, everything's legal now. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to me that the same people that will say, stay off my guns, you know, I want the government involved in everything except the things that affect me.
Right.
And my mentality is like, I don't want you around me.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to be in some areas. Uh-huh. But like, as far as weed is concerned, what the fuck's the problem?
Right.
And Joe Rogan has a line where he says, like, anybody who tells you that you shouldn't have weed, they should all be on weed.
Yeah.
Because they need to open up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And the medicinal sides, besides the fact that I enjoy it recreationally, but I am a complete advocate for the medicinal side. Absolutely. I've watched it help animals. I've watched it help elderly people. I have it in my real life.
The fact that we could, eradicate the paper issues and foresting and the cotton and the pesticides. I mean, exactly. Right. It's just one of those that it's or the fact like, that, let's all I mean, admit what would, it is, though.
Yeah. Like, just why it's that I go exactly. Get a car and find someone who maybe has it and they got it from their second cousin on a street and somewhere. Just... Let me. I mean, I literally walked on the streets of California, and it looked like a candy shop. It was. But they have professionals there. That's my favorite part. Yeah. Again, about going to any of those sort of dispensaries is the education that takes place inside of there. They don't just let you walk in, even for the recreation, and just say, "Give me an ounce of that." Talk to you about, well, what do you feel? What do you need? Mm-hmm. And then I feel. Everyone should go take a tour of a dispensary because I think it then destigmatizes.
Right. Well, it's just a sommelier. It's the exact same thing. Exactly. You know what I mean? It's somebody who's up on their craft and nobody thinks anything different and it has all of the same effects as a glass of wine or a bottle of wine or whatever, where you're just like, why is this a problem again?
Went to a dispensary and it was amazing because I walked in, somebody who has really never, at this point, had it. I smoked weed a couple of times in college, once after. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was doing. It was all terrible, because once you have good stuff, you're like, this is wonderful.
What's this ditch weed shit?
Exactly. Right. Gotta bring this to Missouri, guys. Yeah. But I remember I walked in, and he was like, what are you looking for? And I was like, well, we're here for 4 days. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm obviously going to wait for my kids to go to sleep to do this, because I don't know what's going to do to me.
Sure.
But I was like, something to eat, something to smoke. And he was like, what do you want to smoke? And I just looked at him and I was like, that's a great question. Yeah. Sometimes it's going to be at night, but sometimes I'm going to want to go out with my wife and I'm going to want to get a little high and have fun.
Yeah.
And he was like, so this is hot tub weed, this is run of a mountain weed. Have a great time.
Yeah, right.
Like, fuck you, know this. because you're educated, because it's out there, because you can talk about it.
And that's just that the freedom to be able to talk about it.
Exactly.
And not do the turn to the side and be hey, we're talking about weed, right?
Oh,
no.
My God.
No, we're talking about, hey, this is, you have insomnia, why don't you try a little bit of this and see if that, helps you sleep? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you want to go run up a mountain. Mm-hmm. This one's gonna
also
get
this.
You there. What a fun way to end. Go get your weed, people.
Enjoy it.
Last two questions. Is there anything that you would like to say that you didn't have an opportunity to say?
Honestly, it's just one thing I really like about this medium is I feel like as many people are in it, I think there's something 60,000 podcasts or something like that. But it's always amazing to me, especially now that I've actually been a guest on one as opposed to hosting it, what you can open your mind to and how many people that you can see. So I would say, obviously anybody that's listening should continue to listen and listen to every single episode and watch them on, you guys are on YouTube too, right? Or just on iTunes?
We should.
But just on YouTube, just listen to this one every single time, but also branch out too and listen to lots. That's one of my favorite things about what I've been able to do is that I just try to bring as many people in as I possibly can. And so that, I think, is the only, if I'm going to be, high on the horse or something like that, that's the only thing I would say is just learn, travel, do those things that are going to expand your mind. Because when you do that, you become a much better person.
And I think podcasts in particular, at least the ones that I've been on and the ones that we've been able to have, allows me to get closer to that idea of that we don't all have to agree 100% on everything. Yep. I feel like one more percent closer of saying, well, we might be similar on 78% of this, but that does not mean that the other, I'm bad at math, 20, whatever, 22, has to be the end of it. It's just, we have to figure out if that 22% is a reason why we can't exist together.
Yeah.
Because there is just, obviously, if you want to kill black people and gay people, I don't think we're probably gonna...
We're not gonna change your
mind. We're probably not gonna work out. And I don't think I'm gonna convince you and you won't convince me.
Right.
So why don't we just not? But if it's silly things that we can talk around and maybe learn, I just think that is possible.
Yeah. Between listening to stuff like that, reading and traveling, you can expand your mind to a point where you're kind of like, why was I worried about that?
Right.
I do some of it high, because then you can really expand your mind to do it.
I was just in a place where, and it's one of my favorite things about Disney, and now in both parks, is the amount of foreign language that is spoken around you from all around the world. There are people who have flown in there from Shanghai and been on an 18-hour flight just to come and see Mickey Mouse. That's a damn common denominator, and we don't speak the same language.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, at all.
Yeah.
But we're both there for that.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then, last question is, if you are listening, which you do, who would you like to hear from on the show? Who should we have on?
Oh, my goodness. You should definitely have... You would... The guy that I try to connect you to with on Messenger, Eric Azell, is one of the most passionate, intelligent, goofy humans that I know.
Okay.
And I would love to hear him on this, just because you guys don't know him, and there's no background there, but you, I think, share a lot of similarities and things that you love and appreciate. So hearing a conversation like that, where it's like, we're, I mean, kind of like what you were just talking about, we have no knowledge of each other, but there's one common denominator. So that, to me, would be interesting, just personally and selfishly.
Because with that, sometimes we stay within a certain bubble, too. Eventually, we accidentally, you know, when we have the same similar sort of groups of friends on, they're recommending sort of people within our own bubble. So I love to have people on the show like you who then take me to the next circle around people. Because just by having you on, I'm going to now engage, even for maybe one episode, a different group of listeners just because you're on. So,
absolutely.
So thank you for being on our show,
friends. Absolutely, definitely.
That was so fun. Who do we have on next week?
Ms. Erin Bates,
Ms.
our
Erin
music
Bates.
Director for Superstar, as will have just started.
Hamburger Mary's will have already happened once this airs.
Happened the night before.
We have Ham Bingo, so hopefully that was very successful last night. Whenever
it was.
It was so good.
And yeah, we start Jesus Christ Superstar on Saturday.
Saturday.
Mamma Mia opens this Thursday.
Right, tonight.
Tonight, when you're listening to this. Ooh, I need a calendar in front of me. thanks, Alex.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
all right.
Great.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.